This morning, I want to start out just a little different and talk about something to sort of lead in to our sermon. You know, this time of year, this being 2026, we have elections this year, and you turn on the TV, you can't turn on the TV without seeing political ads, you know, vote for me, vote for this, stuff like that. And we'll be voting for governor this year in Illinois. And it makes me think of a governor's race that was 40 years ago. And let's see, in 1986, the Illinois governor's race. And if you're old enough, remember some of this. Back that time, the Republicans ran James R. Thompson for governor and George Ryan for lieutenant governor. And on the Democrat side, it was Adlai Stevenson III and Mark Fairchild for lieutenant governor. And Stevenson was a name that was well known in Illinois. His father was governor of Illinois and ran for president twice against Eisenhower and stuff. So these two were running for Republican and Democrat. But there was a problem. And the problem was with the Democrats, the lieutenant governor was someone named Mark Fairchild, who had won the primary. And you know, when you go and you vote in the primary, a lot of times, you know the person running for governor. Half the time, at least me, I don't know the name of the guy running for lieutenant governor. So here was someone named, I think he had a German name, and this guy named Fairchild. Fairchild won the slot for lieutenant governor. Only problem was that Mark Fairchild was a LaRouche candidate. And at that time, the LaRouches were a follower of Lyndon LaRouche, or whatever name, and they were almost like a neo-Nazi group, okay? And if you remember that time, they show a picture of them, and there's a woman associated with him riding a tank somewhere, you know, stuff like that. Well, Stevenson refused to run with Mark Fairchild on the ticket. So Stevenson went third party, formed something called Solidarity. I don't know why that didn't line up like that. Formed a group called Solidarity and had a guy named Mike Howlett for his lieutenant governor place. And then the Democrats put in a different guy for their person. Okay. What that did was it split the Democratic vote. And so James Thompson was elected governor. And so you wonder, you know, if that hadn't happened like that, what would have been the outcome? But it split the Democratic vote. James Thompson was elected governor, and all because this guy, Mark Fairchild, had won the vote for lieutenant governor on the Democratic ticket. Well, the reason Mark Fairchild ran for lieutenant governor was because he had recently been fired from his job as a salesman at Hewlett-Packard. Well, the reason he was fired as a salesman Hewlett-Packard was because a buyer from Standard Oil Corporation had complained that, you know, they were having problems with him messing up accounts. And the reason the buyer did that was because one of his group leaders came to him and said, hey, this guy Fairchild has really messed up the account for one of my physicists. And that physicist was me. So you see, I decided in 1986, Illinois governor's election. You know what this means. Don't get me mad. Okay. But if you think about it, because, and Mark Fairchild, I was buying equipment from Hewlett-Packard, and he messed up the count. He wouldn't answer my phone calls, and I'm not kidding. You've heard that you'd shake hands with him and you'd want to wipe your hand off because his palms were so sweaty. But I complained to my group leader, a guy named David Lewis. He complained to the buyer. Buyer complained to Hewlett-Packard. Hewlett-Packard fired him. So he ran for lieutenant governor. And a guy with last name like Fairchild got elected. But just me complaining about, you know, a salesman ended up influencing, maybe not deciding, but influencing the race for governor in Illinois. And the point I want to make is that little actions can have big effects. You know, we can do something or something can happen, and it can have an effect way out of proportion to what we ever imagined. You've heard about theories like the butterfly effect, where a butterfly flaps its wings over in Thailand or something, you know, and ends up having effects somewhere else across the globe. Well, we see things like that happening, and we see it in Scripture. In Joshua chapter 6, when the Israelites were getting ready to cross the Jordan River to attack Jericho, you know, they were going to go in and take the promised land, and this was the first city that they were encountering in the promised land. They were told that all the gold and silver that they found was going to belong to the Lord. And it says, and you by all means abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things and make a camp, the camp of Israel, a curse and trouble it. They weren't supposed to take anything. You know, they were going to attack the city, destroy the city and plunder it, but anything you see, don't you take any of it. Well, Joshua 7, verse 1, but the children of Israel committed a trespass regarding accursed things, for Achan of the tribe of Judah took of the accursed things, so the anger of the Lord burned against the children of Israel. So they attack the city, you know, they go in, here's Achan, he goes into some home and he finds some things, and he takes a Babylonian garment that he saw, you know, nice, something nice to wear. He saw, took 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold. He committed sin because they weren't supposed to take anything. Okay? But then Israel goes and they attack the next city, town of Ai. Not that big city. They sent 3,000 men to attack it. And they were beaten back and 36 men were killed. Now, Joshua, wait a minute, what happened here? The Lord's fighting for us. How this happened that they were beaten back. 36 men were killed. Well, they found it's because of Achan's sin, because of what he did. And think about this. You know, you attack and say, oh, wow, that's a nice garment there. I'm going to take that. Oh, here's some money in the drawer here. You know, the owner's dead. I'm going to take it. And 36 men get killed because of it, because he did not obey. Knowing that, but when they found out who it was, it cost him his life and the lives of his sons and daughters. His whole family were put to death because of that. So something small can have big consequences. And as a Christian, we need to realize that something small can have a big consequence. And we should listen to warnings about that. In Matthew 18, verse 6, it says, But whoever causes one of these little ones to sin, little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depths of the sea. Better off that he weighed him down, throw him into the ocean. You know, you read about or hear about the stories about the criminals, you know, the mob, you know, take someone out in Lake Michigan, you know, concrete overshoes, you know, and dumping them to the ocean. Says it'd be better for him if something like that happened. If you cause someone else to sin, can you do that? Can you cause someone else to sin? Yeah, we can do that. It doesn't mean that we prod them, hey, go steal that thing over there, you know. Go. It can be something as simple as our example, either positive or negative. And maybe we can encourage someone else to sin, and we're not even thinking about it. We're not even trying, you know. And let me ask this. You know, people have children. Do you want your kids to go to heaven? Well, yeah. I want your kids to go to heaven. You know. How many families do you know I have kids or had kids where the parents, members of church, but you never see them on Wednesday night. You see them about maybe two times a month, something like that. You know, they come to church when, you know, they got nothing else going on. Of those families, how many of their kids are faithful after they grow up? I've known several families like that. In fact, I can talk about three families right off the bat that I know like that. And of the nine kids involved, not a single one of them is faithful. Because they were taught something by their parents. They were taught, well, you know, God only matters when I don't have something else to do. You know, I don't have time for that. So just by our actions, and it may not be something we do that's wrong, it may be something good that we don't do, we can influence someone else. Achan, in the case of him, he actively disobeyed. He caused the death of 36 men. In the families I can think of, you know, they didn't steal anything. They didn't lie. But they showed their kids that God's not that important. And it affected them. And maybe they lose their souls as a result. And the question I have to ask is that me? Am I like that? Through my actions, what people see in my, through my example, do I cause other people to sin? Do I cause other people to not be faithful? Or is it something I do that people see and it causes them to be disaffected or turn away? In Galatians chapter 2, verses 11 through 13, Paul is writing, says, "Now when Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to his face because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy." Here's Peter. Peter? The apostle Peter? He led people astray? Yes. Because he acted one way when he was off on his own. He acted like he should when he was on his own. But when other Jews came, he was afraid of being outcast by them. And he acted the hypocrite. And because others saw him, they acted the hypocrite too. You know? So maybe Peter's like, you know, in class, Mike mentioned, you know, about people saying things. You say things, you talk against certain things these days, people try to shut you out. They, oh, you know, that person's biased, that person is a terrible person. You know, when you say something about homosexuality, this transsexual, say, oh, that person, and they will badmouth you and maybe make us afraid to open our mouths, okay? But we need to. We need to not be afraid, and we need to set the example that others can follow, that they can see, and so that we don't lead them astray. Here was Peter. Peter was one of the apostles of the Lord, and because of his action, he caused others to do something that was wrong. So our actions can cause others sin, can have big consequences, you know. Well, if someone knows, you know, they come in, they see a church, and then later they say, oh, you know, so-and-so, I saw him going to this bar over here. And, or he came out after 2 hours in the bar, and he wasn't walking very well. Or maybe he uses language, you know, during the week that a Christian shouldn't be using. Or just maybe by his actions, they think, well, you know, doesn't he go to church where you go? And yet he acts like that. So we can lead people astray. And we should be examples to others instead. We should be godly examples to others. You know, we're told to, like Paul says, you know, follow him just as he follows Christ. We should be godly examples to others. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, he says, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." Be an example to others, because people, they see that and learn from it. And maybe you tell an important message by being that example that's even more powerful than if you said it in words. You know, 1 Peter 5, verse 3, elders told to be example to the flock. We're to be godly examples. And maybe we're an example, and sometimes we don't even realize it. You know, remember, I talked about parents that, do you want your kids to be faithful, and yet they don't attend church, and so do you think their kids are going to when they grow up? I tell you an example, good example I had that I never thought about at the time, was right on this subject here. You know, my dad was a farmer, and this time of year, the farmers are anxious to get out in the fields, and we've had rain and stuff. You can't get out there when the ground's wet. You know, by the same token, you want to be out there on days, and sometimes you just have a few good days during the week that you can get out and get your crops planted. So this time of year, Dad was always anxious to get out in the field. And he'd be out there at sun up, you know, and work till sundown. But on Wednesdays, he came in from the field. His hands would be dirty. He'd be dirty. I remember this because Dad would wash his hands in gasoline before he came in the house. And then that's what you smelled during dinner was gasoline. You know? But he'd stand at the kitchen sink and he'd wash and shave and get ready. So we went to Bible study on Wednesday night. And he did that every week. We never missed Bible study because he thought, oh, you know, I need to stay out in the field and get my crops in. And just the example of that to us kids taught in us that God comes first. God is important. And when you do something like that, as kids grown up, it would feel strange to say, what, we're not going to church tonight? That just doesn't feel right. And I know a lot of you can... You know what I'm talking about. That you would feel strange not going to services. And so we can be examples of others without even saying a word about it. In 1 Corinthians 7, where it talks about marriage, husband and wife, marriage, divorce, it says, if a spouse is an unbeliever, do not depart. Well, why? Because the spouse, by your good example, you may convert your husband or wife. In 1 Corinthians 7, verse 16, he says, for how do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife? Just by that example, I know of two couples, sure, where the wife was a Christian, the husband was not, but because year after year, of that wife's conduct, by her getting up and going to services, she converted her husband. And the husband was baptized, became a Christian. Okay. And so, just by your persistence in serving God, others can see that, and they're influenced by it. And you think about, you know, oh, we talked about, yeah, you want your kids to go to heaven. Well, you want your spouse to go to heaven too. And maybe your example is what gets them there. That they finally obey the Lord. So can we do that? Yeah, we can do that. You may have done it already and don't even realize it. I think I've told you once before, but when I got high school, been now high school about 10 years. And I got a letter from a good friend of mine from high school who was moved to Arizona or something by the time. And in that, he asked me, he says, why is it that during high school you never went out carousing with the rest of us? You know, they get beer somewhere and they go in the country and drink beer, you know, and they go do this and that. And he said, you never did. And he asked, was it because of your faith? And Roman Banks said, well, absolutely. It's because of my faith. But he noticed. You know, here was a guy that actually was arrested because he got drunk one night and broke into a hardware store. Didn't steal anything, just he broke in because he got the key. He knew a guy that worked there and took the key out of his truck. Okay, and he spent two nights in jail. He didn't steal anything one bad, but he got in the mischief. And he writes me and asks, was it because of your faith that you didn't do things like that? Well, yeah. And your faith, by you showing and living that life, you can have a consequence on someone else. You know, I teach college now, and I would go to Jewel and buy cookies. They had these homemade cookies. They used to do that. I'd buy like three packs of them a week. I don't anymore once they doubled the price on them, but go there, and where my office is, there's an open area out in front and tables and chairs, some out there, and students will come, they sit there and stay. So I'd have cookies. I'd just have a thing to grab them. I'd go down and they'd pass out cookies, you know, and just that way I don't eat them all myself. And earlier this semester, I had a girl come and needed someone to mentor her for a science research project and asked if I would do it. I said, yeah, you know, stuff. And I happened to have some cookies there, and she got ready to go. I said, here, why don't you take a cookie with you? And she goes, you know, she goes, I visited this university when I was in high school. And I was over here, and there was someone came out, professor came out, and he gave me a cookie. And she goes, and her boyfriend attended there, you know, and she goes, she asked her boyfriend who that was. Said, oh, that's Dr. Chalmley, you know, so. And she said, when I decided where to go to college, that influenced where I went. Because I gave her a cookie? Yeah. It may be something as small as that. Jesus talking about, you know, giving a cup of cold water to someone. We can influence them. And we might be doing it, and we don't even realize it. But because of our example, we can lead others to Christ. Because of our examples, we can lead others away from Christ. Right? So which are we going to do? It can go both ways. You know, in 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6, Jesus says, do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? A little things that we do can influence these people, and it can be either for good or for bad. And maybe we think, well, you know, I'll just do this one time or something, you know. But what kind of a message are we teaching to others? You know, someone calls and yell for you, hey, Dad, so-and-so's on the phone, and Dad goes, tell him I'm not here, or tell him I'm asleep. Well, they just taught the kids, oh, lying's okay when it's something you really want. Okay. So what kind of example am I? And am I the same way on Sunday when I'm sitting here in the pew as opposed to Tuesday or Thursday when I'm out on a job or something like that? You know, I go fly fishing. I have a buddy I went to grad school with. He got me into fly fishing. So every year we go to Wyoming or Colorado or somewhere fly fishing. Well, we were down Missouri a month ago fly fishing. It was warm enough. And we went to a fly shop. And by this little, they're about that big. Bought a little 18, number 18 fly. A zebra midge. I said, I want 10 of them. And they were like $1.98 a piece. Okay, so I bought 10 of them. We got back to where we were staying. I was putting them in my fly box, and I had 11. And so the next day, Chuck and I went back up there, you know, and I bought something else. And I said, oh, by the way, yesterday I bought some zebra midges, but I had one extra. So charge me for a zebra midge. And the guy looked at me. He said, well, thank you. But just something simple like that. You can impress people. And maybe they say, you know, well, I know so-and-so over here. That's the type of person I want to be. I want to be someone who works for good. I want to be someone who follows the Lord. And we can influence them and bring people to the Lord just by our example. And once again, like I said, maybe you have already. You know, I spoke here a few weeks ago and talked about, you know, people who do the little things. We talked about Tertius, I guess it is, who actually penned the book of Romans. And how little things we do, maybe baking a meal or baking a cake and taking it to someone when they're going through a hard time or something like that, can influence them. But at the same time, we need to realize that we can influence someone in a negative way by doing something wrong. So it's not only God that sees us, it's other people that sees us. And they can go, well, you know, so-and-so, look at him. It doesn't matter to him. But it's when you're consistent, when you try to do what God would want you to do, that people see and they take notice. And maybe you influence someone. Maybe what we need to say then is, hey, why don't you come to church with me? You know, why don't you come over here? Okay. And let's not pass up that opportunity. I don't know if I've told this before, but, you know, Westside and Aurora, where I attend, where we have a meeting that's actually starting today. One of the elders there, Bob Lee, had three daughters. And the oldest daughter was down in Florida. And she was driving one day, and the police stopped her because she had tail light out or something like that. And the police stopped her and didn't give her a ticket or anything, but it said, stop, you have a tail light out. And she goes, there must have been some other reason why you stopped me. She goes, and she invited him to come to church. And he did. And he came the following week. And he came the week after that. And I think about 2 months later, he was baptized, became a Christian. Okay. Just by something as simple as saying, hey, why don't you come to church with me? You know? And so let's influence people. Let's not only influence by our example, let's actively say, hey, you know, live like this. This is how, you know, Christians should live. And I tell you what, if you do it, the world's going to make fun of you. They're going to badmouth you. What's it say? Because you don't run to the same level of dissipation as they do. Yeah. Because you're not like them, they're going to make fun of you or badmouth you or even worse. You know, they're trying to make it so that you don't have a right to speak what the Word of God says. Okay. So we can influence people. Let's influence for good. So maybe we go out, maybe, you know, in the next 20 years or so, maybe you never single-handedly decide a governor's election. Okay. But maybe you decide or single-handedly influence someone to obey the Lord and become a Christian, either by your word, by your example, by your continually, year after year, living a life as God would have you to live, so that others may see it and glorify God. So let me ask, can you do that? Can we do that? Well, yes, I think we can. And we need to glorify God. And let's do so today. And if we can help you become that type of person, Won't you come while together we stand and we sing?